The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A conversation that is not for young or vulnerable ears, as it contains references to rape and sexual abuse. Catherine Wrightstone was just 13 years old when she disclosed that her brother Richard was sexually abusing her. While Catherine believed she was a lone victim, it was later revealed that her two other sisters, Paul and Yvonne, also suffered abuse at the hands of their brother Richard. Now, over 40 years later, justice prevailed for the three sisters, as their brother Richard Brennan was jailed for 8 years earlier this week. An older brother, Bernard, had already been jailed for 4.5 years. But Richard Brennan, age 64, who's originally from Rathfarnham but has been working in the United States, pleaded guilty during his trial to raping and indecently assaulting his sister, Paula Faye, when she was between 15 and 17 years of age. He also pleaded guilty to raping and indecently assaulting Catherine Wrightstone when she was between 9 and 13 years old, and he admitted indecently assaulting the third sister, Yvonne Christ, when she was 20 and he was 18. Well, here to tell us their story is Paula Faye. Paula, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
And thank you very much for joining us in studio. And joining us from Portugal is Catherine. Catherine, good morning to you.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, I want to start with you, Paula, to maybe describe your family. How many of you were there and how many were caught up in this terrible, terrible affair?
Well, I come from a family of 7 children. There are 4 girls and 3 boys. So it actually went boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, girl. That's how each of us, you know, was born. And it ranges in age from our eldest brother, who is now 67 years old, to our youngest sister, Sinead, who unfortunately passed away at the age of 47, and that's approximately 3.5 years ago that we lost our youngest sister.
Now, we know what happened to you and your sisters was utterly dysfunctional, but can you describe the family as it was when you were growing up?
Well, the family as I was growing up was living in an environment that was difficult. Very difficult, particularly within the 4 walls of the home. It was, we had a mother who was very controlling and unfortunately suffered quite significantly with her mental health, and that impacted us significantly growing up. It meant that she was gone on long periods of time in staying in mental health institutions and things
father?
Like that. And unfortunately, my father was an alcoholic. And from time to time, he would go off on these binges and again was completely unavailable to the family.
So effectively, there were times when there was no real parental care or supervision.
That is correct. Yes, there was no parental care. It was like the older siblings took care of the younger siblings in the family.
Now, I'm sure you recall it vividly, but tell us, when did the abuse start in your case?
Well, in my case, I was approximately 7 years old when the sexual abuse started to occur. And it started initially at the hands of my eldest brother, Bernard, who is 7 years older than myself. And my first vivid memory is him calling me off the street when I was out playing with my friends and into the kitchen. And a group of boys were actually in the room. He basically insisted that I strip in front of the boys, and he wanted to show them what girls looked like. And so he was kind of very authoritarian type figure. I was very afraid of my eldest brother, and I didn't really want to do it, but I felt I had no choice, and I wasn't going to get out of that room until such times as I did what he asked me to do. And that's my first memory of him
exploiting you sexually.
Yes.
It became much more serious than that.
It did, yeah. He used to come in and lift me out of my bed at night when everyone was asleep and take me into his bedroom, which he shared with my brothers. and he would sexually abuse me in the bedroom. Firstly, unknown to my other two brothers, and then eventually he actually introduced my brother Richard into what he called a game. And initially Richard was viewing and watching what was going on, and eventually it was that Richard was participating in what was actually going on. So there were times when both of my brothers were actually abusing me simultaneously.
How long did that go on for?
Well, from my memory, Bernard got married at quite a young age, and I was approximately 12 years old when he got married. And
that took him out of the frame.
And that basically, yes, took him out of the frame. He moved, obviously, out of the family home, and there was a sense of sheer relief from me, because I thought, oh my goodness, that's it. It's not going to happen anymore. But unfortunately, that was not the case. And my brother Richard continued the sexual abuse. He did leave the family home to attend a boarding school because he was going to be a Christian brother, and would then only be in the family home during holiday time. So things like the summer holidays, Christmas and Easter. So there was a level of reprieve from what was actually happening. But once holiday time came, I knew what was actually going to happen. And some of the offending from Richard occurred, obviously, before he was of an age where he could actually be charged. He was under the age of criminal responsibility, is what I...
But this went on for quite a while, and he reached certainly the age of criminal responsibility.
Absolutely. Over the age of 14, the abuse actually became much more graphic, and eventually it led to him actually raping me on what I could really recall were on four occasions. They were the ones that I could remember very vividly, and so therefore I only brought that to the table, but there were lots and lots of occasions, but the memory just wasn't clear enough.
Now, this was a man who was going to the priesthood.
That is correct, yeah. After he finished school, he made this decision that he no longer wanted to be a Christian brother, that actually his calling was to be a seminarian and become a priest. And so he attended Clonliffe College.
And he stayed during the week in Clonliffe and came home with the weekends?
Not necessarily. Again, my memory isn't very clear about that. He could have been there for term, if you understand me, and then again would only return to the family home during the summer holidays or Christmas holidays, things like that.
And the abuse continued?
And the abuse, yes, absolutely continued. Yeah.
Now, during all of this time, I mean, a child doesn't know, you know, what the norm is in any given family situation. But you had a sense this is terribly wrong.
I absolutely knew it was wrong. And on several occasions while he was abusing me, I told him that it was wrong and this is not right. We shouldn't be doing anything like this. And he needed help. I actually, on several occasions, told him he should go and get help. And he just kept telling me that God was going to help him. He was going to be a priest. That's kind of the attitude that was taken to it. When the abuse occurred initially, there was always this fear put on me that if I spoke out, that my mother would end up in a lunatic asylum and that our father would drink himself to death. And is that what I really wanted? And that would mean that all of us as children would be split up and sent into orphanages and this sort of thing. So it was a real living fear for me.
Were you aware at any point that your sisters had also been abused?
I was. It was 1984 when Catherine, my younger sister, actually spoke out that there was some abuse. I wasn't actually aware at what level it was at. It was just that her brother Richard had been interfering with her. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, it's bigger than I thought. It's not just me. But that level of fear that was put in me from such a young age, I literally had no voice and I could not speak out.
So Catherine, who's, as I say, joining us from Portugal, Catherine, can you tell us in your case when it started?
Yes. So to the best of my recollection, it started when I, right after my 9th birthday. As I said, that's to the best of my recollection. There could have been earlier, you know, it could have started earlier than that. But that is when it started at age 9 after my birthday. So that would have been 1980 for me.
How long did the abuse go on? And was it carried out by just Richard, or was also Bernard involved?
It was Richard. Bernard was not involved with me, thankfully.
Had Bernard left the home to get married at that point?
He had.
So you weren't available to him, as it were?
Correct.
Now, you were probably the first person to try to report this properly. You had a pal.
I did. My best friend, Michelle, I had shared with her one day. I felt this need to, I was concerned about our youngest sister. And I had said to Michelle that I was afraid for her, but I also, I could not tolerate what was occurring. So I decided to have a conversation with Michelle. And in fairness to her, you know, she was just a year older than me. She was wonderful about everything. And she was the one that encouraged me to tell a person in authority. And we had both been present when a nurse at our school had given a sex education talk. And to me, she seemed open and she seemed knowledgeable about, you know, such things as what I was experiencing at the hands of my brother. I do want to add that, not to go off your track a little bit too much, but I can't emphasize enough the importance of an individual's appropriate reaction when a child discloses something such as, you know, childhood sexual abuse. It is just so important to positive health outcomes and mental health outcomes for somebody to react appropriately. And for me, that was Michelle. She did react appropriately and continuously told me that it was not my fault. I don't remember exactly how I described it to her. I'm sure, you know, I was only 12 at the time. I didn't really have the words that I do as an adult now. But at that time, she knew that it was very upsetting to me that Richard was coming into my room and that he was, I don't know what word I use, but violating me in unspeakable ways. And so she was instrumental in guiding me and encouraging me to tell an adult. And, you know, she just kept saying, this will stop. You know, they know what to do. They will handle this appropriately. And I was very fearful of my parents and how they were going to react. I verbalized that to her. I may have verbalized that to the nurse that I spoke with. I don't remember exactly what I told her, but I do remember that individual also being kind. And, you know, I felt somewhat embarrassed, but I felt like she was really trying to put me at ease.
Okay, now, these days we know what would happen, I think, and I hope, that all the right things would be done. But in this case, the person went to the head nun. The head nun, in turn, called your parents.
Correct.
So the people who were charged with looking after you were being brought in to be remonstrated with, I suppose, that they'd let you down. But, you know, no talk of the guards or anything like that at that point.
No, that is correct. No, there was no, I never I never went to An Garda Síochána at that stage. I was, you know, still somewhat fearful. I was fearful that this nurse was, well, I knew she was going to probably eventually tell my parents, and I feared the reaction, and the reaction was pretty catastrophic in our home from my perspective. It wasn't good. But yes, in fairness to the head nun, she did inform my parents. And sadly, my parents for months and months chose to do nothing. At least that's how it appeared from my perspective. And then finally, a referral was made to St. John of God's. And we attended what I found out at the time. My memory during the trial was that there was a meeting that did not go very well, that my mother ended very abruptly. But I did remember meeting one-on-one, having some individual sessions with a therapist or a psychiatrist there for a period of time. I do remember being quite defensive, not particularly trusting them, because to have the perpetrator placed in the same room across from you and in a setting is quite intimidating. So that is my memory, that I was in a room with my siblings, my older siblings, and my parents, and Richard was present. So that did not feel good. But that was my experience.
Now, at what point did it become apparent to you, Paula, and to you, Catherine, that you were both being abused in this way, and that your sister, Yvonne, had also suffered at the hands of one of your brothers?
So Paula very bravely did disclose to me after I was in St. Pat's for a period of time, about 7 weeks. I spent my 21st birthday in there, actually. And after I had come out, I don't remember exactly when, but Paula had disclosed to me that was my first knowledge. So I would have been, you know, 21, 22 years of age.
Sorry, Catherine, to cut across there, but I believe it was in the summer of 1992 is when that happened.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, this shared awful experience, how did that affect you both? I mean, to know that you both had been abused in this way and that you both had to live with the terrible secret of all of that for so long?
Well, for me, it felt horrific. When I did disclose to Catherine what had happened to me, I think there was a sense of relief in that I was able to actually tell Catherine, I believe you. I know that what happened to you, because it also happened to me. But unfortunately, I was in no place to actually move forward at that point in time. I had a baby. I was married. I hadn't disclosed anything
to anyone. Now, the awful thing about it, there's so many aspects of this which horrify me. When you were getting married, your two brothers were at the wedding.
Yes.
And your mother had wanted your priestly brother, Richard, to conduct the ceremony.
Yep, that is correct.
I mean, this would be just such a horror story, that the man who had abused you as a child was going to conduct the marriage ceremony.
That is correct.
It didn't happen, though.
Well, technically it did, because obviously I hadn't disclosed anything to anybody. Nobody at that point knew what had occurred except my two brothers and myself. And my mother insisted that he should be that person. But I didn't just have him there. My now ex-husband, he had an uncle who was a priest, and I insisted that priest was actually going to be there and presiding over the occasion.
Now, this goes on because Richard then, having been a priest for some time, meets somebody and gets married. And the question of then there might be children in his job, he might be dealing with younger people. Did either of you do anything about that, Catherine?
I did. Yes, I did actually. That was kept secret from me that he had actually, that he was getting married and that he had married. That was kept secret for some time. And when I discovered that, I actually wrote a letter to Bridget. I was not able to give that letter to An Garda Síochána because I did not have a copy of it anymore, but I couldn't find it. But I did write to her, and that was sometime between 1997 and perhaps maybe 2002. And I realized that's a very broad range of time, but I'm just trying to be completely honest. I don't remember exactly the year, but I found out where she was working. And I wrote a letter. I sent it to her place of employment rather than their home. And I addressed it to her private and confidential, marked private and confidential. I know that she received the letter because at the time, my brother Eamon, and sadly he also passed away, Sinead passed, and also Eamon. My brother Eamon had told me that Richard had told him that I had almost destroyed his marriage. So I don't know what conversation ensued or occurred between Richard and Bridget, but nonetheless, I was assured by my brother Eamon that she had in fact received the
letter. You felt obliged ethically, morally, to expose
Correct.
The kind of person that your brother Richard was and is, and therefore
Correct.
Perhaps people might not be safe around him.
Correct. That was my main impetus for writing it. I felt that I did have an obligation, a moral obligation, and it was the right thing to do. So she chose never to contact me. So we never had a discussion again. And then, I mean, we never talked about it. She never called me. And then finally in 2012, I became aware that Richard was the director of Christian education at a church, a youth program over in America. And I wrote a letter. I went to my siblings in 2012, January of 2012, and I said, this is what I would like to do. Are you willing to put your name to the letter? And most of them said yes. And I sent the letter to him. I thankfully at that time, and I did keep a copy of the letter, I actually emailed him, and then I sent a letter via registered certified mail, and I kept copies of all of that I was able to give to An Garda Síochána, all the receipts so that they could see. And then I had the signed, you know, I could see that it was in fact received. At that time, the pastor of that church chose not to speak with me directly. There was an attorney from the church who was the head of the board of the church, who happened to be an attorney. He called me at my home. I was living in Pennsylvania in America, because I lived in America for 30 years prior to living here in Portugal for the last 2 years. And he contacted me and asked me, his words to me were that Richard had brought in a lot of money for the church, and that he had grown, expanded their youth program because he's such, you know, a charismatic individual and good at his job. And they wanted me to retract my statement, the letter, basically. And I told him I was not willing to do that. And then Paula, I'll let Paula continue the story here.
Yeah, so Catherine phoned me at that time, that particular day that she had received this call from this attorney. And she said, oh, they're looking for the letter to be retracted. And I said, give me the phone number and I'll also make a call, which I did. And I was, when I got through to the number, I was told that there was a meeting in Sue and could they call me back? And I said, absolutely not. I said, I'm calling you from Ireland here and I need to speak with this person immediately. And I insisted that I be put through, which they did. And again, I was informed that they were looking for this letter to be retracted. And I said, absolutely not. That is not going to happen. I said that what is in that letter is the truth, and that we were all abused at his hands. And it is important that he take note of that and do the right thing. And that there was absolutely no way that any of us were going to retract the letter that had been sent.
Now, as a result of your position on this, he was removed from that contact with the younger people.
Well, he resigned.
Yeah. Okay, but that was the net effect.
Yes.
I want to roll on to trying to get the Gardaí involved and the DPP involved and finally getting to court. How long a process was that, Paula?
That was a 6-year process. That's the length of time that it took. So we went to An Garda Síochána in initially January of 2019. Catherine had come over from the USA just after the new year, and both of us went to Rathfarnham Garda Station. And they were absolutely fantastic. They had actually set up, we had rung ahead. We had let them know that we wanted to come in and we needed to talk to somebody. And they had actually got somebody there that had some experience of how this process would work. And so Catherine returned to Ireland in March of 2019, and she did all of her statements, and then they started with mine.
Now, ultimately, the DPP decides that charges will be pressed against both Bernard and Richard.
Yeah.
And we have the culmination of those trials, Bernard being handed a 4.5-year sentence and Richard an 8-year sentence. Your reaction after all that had happened to you as a family, for the girls being abused by their brothers, what was your reaction to those sentences?
I was extremely disappointed at the leniency of this sentence. I mean, initially the judge was talking about it being 12 years for Catherine for the rape charges against her, and for me it was going to be 10 years. And then he's talked about the sexual abuse charges, which were of a lesser charge, and for some of the ones that were for Catherine because of the year that was after 1981, that they would be 6 years, and then for mine and Yvonne's it was something like 18 months. And we were talking, my goodness, oh God, what sort of time
these guys would be locked up for, decades.
For a long time, yeah. And then all of a sudden he was reducing Catherine's from 12 to 9 and mine from 10 to 7.5, and then Catherine's sexual abuse charges to 4, and the sexual abuse charges against us and the ones that had occurred for Catherine at a younger age to 14 months. And then all of a sudden he said, so I'm going to impose a global sentence, and that will be 9 years with 1 year suspended. And we were like, what? We just couldn't believe that it could go from what we were expecting to be a much higher sentence to this 9-year sentence. So from my perspective, it felt like he wasn't getting anything for what he had done to me. And there were 4 rape charges in my name. And I'm very upset around the fact that he's going to be serving this global sentence, which is regarded as a complete concurrent sentence, as opposed to him being given individual sentences.
Judges always have their rules and regulations and precedents and all the rest, which they will invoke. But do you expect the DPP to challenge those sentences?
Well, obviously, that's not up to us.
It's something you want.
It's something we want. Absolutely, it is something that we want. We want it looked at, and we want them to consider the true severity of the number of years that abuse was occurring within our family home, because it just kept occurring further and further.
And Catherine, your reaction to those sentences?
I was devastated, quite honestly. I think that from my perspective, the Irish judiciary's failure to grasp the gravity of sibling sexual abuse is pretty significant. I mean, it just felt like a minimization of the crime, you know, especially just, you know, due to the fact that we're talking about sibling sexual abuse here. I felt that it did not reflect the severity of the crime. I mean, these are not isolated events. These are sustained, calculated and devastating violations. And I think it really represented the failure, from my perspective, to understand the unique trauma of incest. It showed a lack of survivor-centered sentencing. You know, that was like the focus just sort of drifted to Richard's remorse and his background and the family support. And it just I think that judges in Ireland repeatedly prioritized the potential for rehabilitation of the abuser over the real and lifelong costs to the survivors.
All right, Catherine. Thank you very much for joining us from Portugal. That's Catherine Wright-Stone. And Paula Fay, thank you very much for joining us in studio here in Dublin.
Thank you so much, Pat, for your time. We really, really appreciate it.
And if you've been impacted by anything mentioned in our conversation, you can contact the Rape Crisis Centre free phone 24-hour national helpline 1-800-77-8888.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.